It's time for the political junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider. Ah!
It's another busy week. Last night, 10 Republican presidential hopefuls faced off in New Hampshire. The Democrats took their turn on Sunday, and a bolt of lightning may have put the fear of God into Rudy Giuliani. We'll explain that in a minute. The immigration bill is still up for grabs in the Senate. It just survived another poison pill challenge this afternoon. Scooter Libby's sentence triggers talk of a couple of other P words, as in presidential pardon. Representative William Jefferson has his own legal problems. He's the one who stashed $90,000 in his freezer and may be booted from the House. If you have questions about any of the debates, presidential or immigration, about the latest legal troubles in Washington or senatorial succession in Wyoming, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. As always, you can weigh in at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He writes the weekly Political Junkie column on NPR's website, and he's our own political junkie every Wednesday here on Talk of the Nation in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Weekly spelled W-E-E-K-L-Y.
Every time, every single time.
Not W-E-A-K.
For you. Okay. Let's start with the debate last night. The 10 Republican candidates, those who've formally declared anyway, were all there. The moderator, CNN's Wolf Blitzer, asked Rudy Giuliani to respond to criticisms about his stance on abortion. And just as he began to talk.
Catholic bishop, any religion. Issues of
that's
morals.
That's the lightning that's having an effect on our system.
Look, for someone who went to parochial schools all his life, this is a very frightening thing that's happening right now.
As we should describe, all the other candidates were mocking and cowering away from Rudy as they expected him to be incinerated there on the stage in New Hampshire.
Yes, that was certainly the fun highlight of the debate. What I thought was the most interesting highlight of the debate, you were talking earlier about the protest of President Bush at the G8 summit. Well, there was an anti-Bush protest in Manchester yesterday at the Republican debate. It seemed like, you know, once upon a time, George W. Bush was the name that, you know, you always took right after God. Clearly,
well, was, God, Ronald Reagan, and then
George W. Bush. George W. Bush was not in the top three yesterday. Most candidates seemed to go out of their way. You know, it seemed like it took a long time for Democratic candidates to realize that the war was unpopular. John Edwards, Hillary Clinton came around late. It seemed like Republican candidates yesterday came around late about the national view about George W. Bush, in that he may not be a plus going into the 2008 election.
And how did that manifest itself? I mean, how did Mitt Romney distance himself from George W. Bush?
Well, there's always been dissatisfaction with the way the war is going on, and certainly a lot of, given the fact that it is President Bush's support of this immigration compromise in the Senate. You heard a lot of references to the Bush-McCain-Kennedy bill, some of the more conservative candidates lumping the three of them together.
And here is, by the way, Senator McCain, who made his case in support of the compromise immigration bill.
And it is a serious national security problem. We need to act, my friends. And if someone else has a better idea, I'd love to have them give it to us.
Thank you, Senator. Hold on.
And at that point, he was putting the other candidates on the spot. He said, look, you can find a lot of things in this bill to be against. This is something that can get through the Senate. We need to act now.
You know, it's very interesting. We've talked about, or people have talked about, John McCain all these months, how he's pandered to the right wing, that when he ran for president in 2000, he was more of a straight talker. Now he's more of a panderer. Well, he didn't pander to the right wing here. He, as in Iraq, he's taken on a very unpopular position, and that is this Senate compromise on immigration. And what John McCain does, it really doesn't bode well for a candidate running for president, because you have to work for compromise. You have to work with the Ted Kennedys of the world to get things accomplished. And sometimes when you're in a Republican audience, that's not a popular position to take.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. If you'd like to weigh in with the political junkie, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org. Let's start with Dan. Dan with us from Chicago.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. Listen, on Mitt Romney's embarrassing gaffe last night, where he completely blew the run-up to the Iraq war, claiming miraculously that there was no inspections regime, I'm just wondering, is he going to pay a price for this? Is anybody going to call him out? I mean, I would be horribly embarrassed if this were my candidate for president and he gets these basic facts wrong. And I'd just be curious what your political junkie has to say about that. Thanks.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, it's interesting. Mitt Romney's had almost a charmed life, even though in the national polls he hasn't done that well. I mean, he's maybe about 10, 11, 12%, but he's getting more and more support in. He's leading, I think, in one poll in New Hampshire. He's doing very well in South Carolina and Iowa. And yet, I think in the last two debates, he seemed to be less sure of his facts, more comfortable with generalities and smiles than actual facts. And I'm wondering, that's a good question, I'm wondering if it does hurt him down the line, because, again, he looks very good. He gives a strong, confident presence. But, again, on some basic facts, he may not have all the stuff with him.
The gaffe I saw quoted in all the papers this morning was not Mitt Romney's, but Mike Huckabee's.
I heard that immediately. When Mike Huckabee was talking about that today is the birthday of Ronald Reagan, of course, it was the anniversary, the three-year anniversary of his death. It was an odd thing, but nobody mentioned it during the debate.
Let's get another caller in. This is Bob. Bob with us from Mountainside in New Jersey.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Hey, when the political junkie, and it seems to be the lead story in some of the newspapers and news organizations that candidates distance themselves from President Bush. Well, you know, that was prompted. They did not come out on their own and did that. They were prompted by questions by, you know, Wolf Blitzer. And some of these gotcha questions that are being asked by CNN and MSNBC, which was a real joke, seem to be designed to trip up the candidates. Trying to find out what they really think about issues.
Is that a fair assessment, do you think, Ken?
I don't know if there's a good question. I don't know if they're trying to trip up the candidates as they are looking for conflict. There's no question that the moderators in both the Republican and Democratic debates want the candidates to take on each other. We saw that with the Democrats on Sunday. They wanted John Edwards to take on his opponents on the vote on the Iraq funding bill. But so I kind of think they were looking for some kind of a thing. But you know, Jim Gilmore, the former governor of Virginia, didn't hesitate. Tommy Thompson, the former governor of Wisconsin, when he said, I wouldn't send George Bush to the UN. I mean, clearly they were looking for some kind of conflict, but the Republican candidate certainly had showed no hesitancy in taking on, in accepting that challenge.
Hmm. Thanks very much for the call, Bob.
You're welcome.
And of course, when the Democrats' turn came up, that was Sunday night in New Hampshire, the question was not, what would you do with George W. Bush if you were elected president? It was, what would you do with Bill Clinton if you were elected president? And I think the best line in that exchange goes to Mike Gravel of Alaska.
Senator Gravel, if you are elected president, how, if at all, would you use former President Bill Clinton in your administration?
How would I use him? Well, I'd send him as a roving ambassador around the world. He'd be good. He could take his wife with him. He'll still be in the Senate.
And you could hear Hillary Clinton laughing there.
And Republicans as well. I think that a lot of people would like a lot of Republicans would like somebody to take Hillary with them. But it's very interesting because Bill Clinton remains the most popular figure in the Democratic Party. And for all the hesitancy that voters may have about Hillary Clinton's candidacy, I think that the presence of Bill Clinton out there could only help her, and it seems to have been helping her.
And the issue that came up again and again and again in the Democratic debate was Iraq.
Well, look, John Edwards is clearly, I mean, if you look at national polls, and again, you know how I feel about national polls this way, you know,
early
eight,
on, yeah.
8 months in advance, but he clearly needs to separate himself from his two co-frontrunners, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. John Edwards, who voted for the bill in 2002 to authorize the war against Iraq, is trying to be the anti-war candidate, the real strong anti-war candidate, pointing out that perhaps that even though Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama voted correctly on the funding bill, they didn't vote, they didn't show any leadership.
Well, here's how they came up exactly in the debate. This is John Edwards.
Others were quiet. They went quietly to the floor of the Senate, cast the right vote, but there is a difference between leadership and legislation.
You want to name names?
No, I think it's obvious who I'm talking about.
It is to me, but it might not be to some of the viewers.
Senator Clinton and Senator Obama did not say anything about how they were going to vote until they appeared on the floor of the Senate, voted. They were among the last people to vote.
Name names. It's just you and me. Nobody else is listening.
And, you know, the funny thing is that in the 2004 campaign, when John Edwards was running for vice president, he was still supporting his vote. Again, still an unpopular vote with the Democratic electorate. But in 2004, as the VP candidate, he was still supporting that vote to go to war.
Now, in both of these debates, they're still cavalry charges. Indeed, a couple of prospective nominees weren't even on the platform, and they were both pretty crowded. In any case, is anybody managing to break out in either party?
Well, if we talk about the second tier candidates, you know, obviously Mike Huckabee is trying to have this folksy charm. He's looking at a possible VP spot. I mean, it's early to say this, mm-hmm. but again, in both parties, it seems to be a top three tier for both. You know, the Democrats, you have Obama, Clinton, and Edwards. For the Republicans, McCain, Giuliani, and Romney. And it just seems like whatever the other candidates do. Look, Ron Paul, the only anti-war Republican on the stage yesterday, and the only, matter of fact, he voted against the war in 2002, trying to break out, and has a strong following on the internet. But again, if you look at these national numbers, he's not raising money. He's not getting the kind of support he needs to be a factor.
And Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor and our political junkie here on Talk of the Nation every Wednesday afternoon. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Jake on the line. Jake with us from St. Louis. Jake, you there?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm a former Republican voter, and I've since just kind of dropped my affiliation with either party. The only candidate, having watched these debates, who really seems to be striking me as being somebody who appeals to me is Ron Paul. And I guess I'm just wondering the political junkie's thoughts on whether he'll be able to translate the support that he seems to be getting online into, you know, being able to launch himself into the top tier.
Well, I think every story I've ever read about Ron Paul says, well, he's interesting in the debates, and he stands out in the debates, but, and the but is always that he has no chance, that he is raising no money. But again, if the kind of buzz you see on the internet could somehow develop into some real political action, then he could be a factor. Given the fact that perhaps...
Well, Dr. Dean's buzz on the internet turned into real money as he raised it on the internet. He's not been able to do that, Ron Paul?
And how many primaries and caucuses did Howard Dean win? I think one total, and that may have been Vermont. The point is that Ron Paul, given the fact that polls show that at least perhaps a third of the Republican electorate really have serious questions about the war, one would think that Ron Paul could take advantage of that kind of sentiment.
All right. Jake, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can turn now to Jim. And Jim's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, Ron, just a question. Look, I'm just an average middle-class guy. I'm very interested in politics. I teach in high school. I'm just interested, what is the difference between the Republicans and Democrats and organized crime? I don't understand this. I mean, we have Republicans who protect other Republicans when they commit criminal acts. Duke Cunningham, the other congressman in Florida, responsible for sending lewd emails to interns. Then we have William Jefferson taking $90,000 in bribes, and the Democrats say nothing, but they're willing to point out the Republicans. The Republicans say nothing, but they're willing to point out the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Both, to me, seem to act like more like criminally organized enterprises than political parties.
We should just add parenthetically that we'll let you go, Jim, because your phone is acting funny. But William Jefferson, the Democrat from New Orleans, has indicted 16 counts this week on bribery. And again, that damning fact that everybody remembers of the FBI discovering $90,000 of cash in his freezer tucked in with the frozen food.
Right. Apparently, if Jefferson is convicted on all counts, he could get 235 years in prison. I understand his attorneys are trying to cut that in half. That was a joke. But in fairness to the Democrats here, Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats who have been railing against the Republican, so-called Republican culture of corruption, has acted against Jefferson, and they booted him off the small they started a resolution to boot him off small business. And obviously the Democrats want Jefferson gone as fast as possible because they want to focus on these other Republican targets.
Mm-hmm. But the caller is certainly right. There has been any number of people indicted, and Republicans were protectful of their people who were indicted when they were in charge.
That's exactly true. And again, but remember, Bill Jefferson, even though we've talked about the money in the freezer and all this stuff for the last 2 years, it was only this week when he was finally indicted. So talking about Bill Jefferson to have to go away, well, Bob Ney was convicted. Duke Cunningham was convicted. Mark Foley, the lewd emails guy, did resign because of his conduct. It was only this week that Bill Jefferson was indicted, and until he's proven guilty, then I think maybe that some action will be taken.
Just a minute or so left, but I wanted to get into the strange succession story in Wyoming. The sitting Republican Senator Craig Thomas there died earlier this week.
Right, he died on Monday, 74 years old of leukemia, but Wyoming has a state law that says that the successor to the departed senator has to be of the same party. So even though you have a Democratic governor in Wyoming, David Freudenthal, would have to name a Republican. The Republican Party in Wyoming will give Freudenthal a list within 3 weeks of three Republicans, and the governor will have to pick one of those three to serve for the next year.
So it won't change the balance of power in the Senate, at least not this time, because there's talk that Freudenthal may want to run for that Senate seat. He gets to essentially pick his Republican opponent in, 2 years' time?
That's exactly right. Right now you have 49 Democrats, 49 Republicans. Joe Lieberman, an independent. Bernie Sanders, an independent. Tim Johnson of South Dakota.
Very ill.
Well, he's recovering, but has not voted yet. It's a very tightly controlled, tightly balanced Senate that, again, you'll see a lot of changes in the 2008 election.
Other states have this provision?
Some of them do, but of course we always remember when Bobby Kennedy, the Democrat, was picked, was assassinated. Nelson Rockefeller named a fellow Republican to succeed him. When John Hines in Pennsylvania, the Republican, died, Bob Casey, the Democrat, named a Democrat to succeed him. Most states allow the governor to name somebody of the governor's own party. Wyoming is one of the few states that has a state law that does not allow that.
Ken Rudin, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. He writes the weekly Political Junkie column. You can read that at npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. To be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.